Argentina, DePina says he and his fellow fans have faith that the team can continue to surprise. For NPR News, I'm Chris Polanski in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Team USA plays Bosnia-Herzegovina in the first stage of the knockout round. The match is Wednesday, July 1st, at 8 p.m. Eastern Time in San Francisco. I'm Noora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Bloomsbury, publisher of Courage Can Save Us by Marine Corps veteran and social entrepreneur Rye Barcott, a call to courage and public service for America's 250th, available wherever books are sold.
Well, good morning once again, and welcome to The Conversation on WVIK. It's a weekly celebration of local radio the way it's meant to be brewed. This week, my guest is Francis Williams from Mercado on 5th. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll stick around for this week's Conversation on WVIK. Francis, it is already a delight to have you back in the studios of WVIK. So grateful. I know these are such busy days for you, but to just get a few minutes of your time sneaking away from all the wonderful work you do, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for allowing me to be here and just be exquisitely present. So thank you.
I love it. I love it. Well, for those who haven't met you yet, well, first, what are you waiting for? She's an amazing person. But secondly, it would be good to kind of recap a little bit about your story, which I find very, very heartwarming, because it involves, like many, many people, growing up here, then going away and doing amazing things, and then coming back to this area. But please, would you give us a recap?
Yeah, absolutely, Kai. So, you know, my our journeys are never direct lines, right? It's always zigging and zagging. And I think, you know, I've definitely done that in my career. Growing up here in Moline was such a blessing. I feel like, you know, I got very well prepared and went and decided, you know, after college to go live in Colorado. Mm-hmm. So I think I was 8 years old the first time my parents took me on a vacation out there. And I was like, oh, I want to live here one day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was 16, went out with Christ the King Church to see the Pope. He came for World Youth Day like in 92.
I remember that.
Yeah. Isn't that? Yeah. So that was fun. And then I had an experience there that I was like, yep, I need to be here. Spent 24 years in Colorado. I'm a finance geek by background, you know, had an incredible opportunity to work with families all across the nation with the area of estate planning and business succession planning, you know, from a financial planning and insurance perspective. And then in 2008, joined a firm there where I was able to kind of really grow into international. And started my own international practice working with families down in Latin America. So I was really lucky. I started in the country of Colombia. My mother's from there. She's one of 14. So that's quite a big network to start off with. And I guess I did a good enough job with families in Colombia that they started referring me to families in Mexico and Peru and Uruguay and Guatemala and Costa Rica. I mean, I've been to most of the Latin American countries. So such a blessing. And then, you know, unfortunately, you know, our parents age and, you know, they pass on. My dad passed away pretty suddenly, and that gave me the opportunity to come back and be able to, you know, care for my mom, which is such a blessing, and then be able to contribute right here in the Quad Cities with a Latino serving organization, which really is part of my passion. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur as well by background. I started 3 different businesses, and then after COVID, I couldn't travel anymore, right? Like many of us who were working internationally, the world stopped. And thank goodness I was here in the U.S. and not outside.
Right.
So what a blessing that was.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I certainly get the finance track. But what were some of the things that you encountered as a kid, disciplines, classes, that sort of thing, whether in secondary or college or anything like that, that also managed to capture your fancy? Because I love knowing what people majored in. Yeah. I also love learning what they grooved on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, I come from a family of entrepreneurs, so I think that, you know, that definitely helped to form, you know, my interest. And then I've met certain people throughout my path. You know, my father was an entrepreneur. He was an attorney here locally. And then I met, you know, somebody actually, Ray Navarro Sr., who's an insurance agent here. And I remember him giving like a presentation at Seton when I was like in fourth or fifth grade. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. He's pretty smart. Like, you know, this is really kind of interesting stuff. And then that kind of got me going. And, you know, I started working for my dad when I was 13 because, you know, family labor laws don't apply.
That's one way to look at it.
Right? So, yeah. You know, and that really gave me a good sense. But I think I was 17 by the time I knew, you know, I don't want to be an attorney. I want to be the one hiring the attorneys. And so
I like that. That's sort cool.
Of, yeah. So that sort of, you know, sent me on my path too.
But where did you go to college?
So I here locally went to Seton, uh-huh. then Alleman. And then again, zigging and zagging. I started off at St. Mary's College in South Bend, Indiana.
Yep.
You know, it was really a hard time for me. I just did not feel like I fit in. I didn't, you know. So I transferred back here to Blackhawk, did a semester here, and then went to Northern Illinois.
Fantastic. Yeah. In fact, Northern Illinois is on the radar screen for me now because a colleague there is arranging something that I don't even know the details yet. We'll get there to it. But I do want to pick on you on one thing right off the bat. Yeah. You mentioned that your family's roots include some roots in Colombia.
Yes.
And normally at the end of the program, Frances, I will ask people for recommendations of books they're reading and movies they've watched and music they're listening to, but we have a brand new restaurant in the Quad Cities,
yes.
And I understand it's got some Colombian specialties. Now, I need you to instruct me about where to go and what to order.
Oh, I cannot speak highly enough of Corazon Latino restaurant on Fifth Avenue in Moline. Mm. You know, and Moline, downtown Moline, there's a lot of new restaurants and kind of bars and little shops that are popping up now, so it's really fun to see, you know, that growth. But, you know, they must have done their homework. I have not met Chef Juan Hernandez, but I, you know, he has such a beautiful reputation, both personally and professionally. So I really admire that. But what they've done with El Fogón in Buttendorf and Corazon Latino, you know, he did his homework. Those are authentic dishes, the two that I've tried that are Colombian.
So what should I try?
So it's called Banda Paisa. Which is like bandeja paisa, which is like it's be hungry for that dish. It's like rice and beans and fried plantains and chicharrón, which is like pork belly.
Yeah. Wonderful.
So good. Sausage, arepas, which are very typical from, you know, that part of South America. So it is just such a treat. So
okay.
They really must have, he must have done his homework or gone there.
I will fast for a couple of days before my first visit.
Do that.
Okay, then for the second visit, what am I getting from Colombia?
There's an arepa that he does that he stuffs with like cheese and frijoles. And try the guacamole because his version of guacamole has the thick chunks of pork belly on top of it. Unbelievable.
My goodness.
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. Well, it's a good thing that it's morning and I can be...
right?
I can be mapping out.
Go for that bike ride, Kai.
Yes, right. Mapping it out.
Get the miles in and then go to Corazon.
Well, okay. And we're going to come back to things like that too. But you mentioned downtown Moline. And my brother who grew up in Rock Island, but he's been away for decades on the West Coast and he was back and he always wants to take a look around. And it's clear that downtown Moline is hopping. I mean, it is on the move. It's moving up and forward and has been for years now. But it was kind of bracing for him to see everything that's going on.
Yeah.
I have to think that Mercado gets a little bit of credit for getting people back downtown, getting excited. But let's talk about the history of Mercado. How many years has it been now?
This is the 10th year of Mercado.
Isn't that amazing?
It really is.
I remember when that was getting started.
I mean, and I wasn't here
when
it was getting started. And I grew up not having a place like Mercado to come and celebrate my Latina roots.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we have this in the Quad Cities is really such a cultural asset. I like to think that, yes, we definitely help contribute to that, especially on Friday nights, because I know that there are a lot of people that struggle to find parking. In fact, I think the city of Moline has contracted, you know, a parking consultant now to come and help figure out, you know, all the different facets to that. So there were some advisors that came by and checked out, you know, Mercado one night.
What a great problem to have, though.
It is a great problem to have.
Yeah.
You know, and I think... the current mayor, you know, Mayor Sangeetha Rajapati, she is very conscientious of what is happening in Moline, how to make it better, mm-hmm. open to new ideas, you know, has these listening sessions, keeps that channel of communication going. So that, and that's what you need from community. You know, you need all the voices to be heard and to, you know, see, like, what are the possibilities with my city? What do I want to see? Because it takes all of us together
right.
to make a great community.
And it's a great recipe. I remember decades ago, Rock Island hit on it with things like Jamaica My Weekend, and they did these cultural festivals that would be sort of one-offs. And we see it in Davenport. They just did an amazing Juneteenth celebration,
yes.
which in the downtown, phenomenal. But what I think is very distinctive about Mercado on Fifth is it, you know, it's every Friday.
Yeah.
And you can count on that. You can set your watch to it. And it just brings a pulse and yeah. a wonderful thing. The food is amazing. The vibe is incredible. The music is always great. But you're diving into next week will be July 3rd. And it looks like there's, it sounds like a DJ maybe on July 3rd.
Right. So this year we really wanted to lean into local.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Mercado is such a, you know, every year is a little bit different. We always put so much love into that program. We always, I mean, certainly there's the financial side and we have to be fiscally responsible and all of those things. But I know that we are bringing out some of the best of Latin culture mm-hmm. in our region. And to be able to celebrate that through the local bands that have contributed, you know, some of them for over 50 years yeah. to the music scene here in the Quad Cities
yeah.
Is so cool. But I also love that we do celebrate like the best of multi-generations of families coming together. You know, we've got kind of two waves of folks that come to Mercado. There's the early birds that, you know, don't like sitting in the lines, which I totally get to wait for their favorite taco. And then there's the families, you know, that wait until like they got the little ones, right? They got to get them home at 7:30 or 8 for bedtime.
Yeah.
So I get that. But then you also get the next round at 8 o'clock, 7:38, where they're wanting to dance.
Oh, of course.
And I cannot, I mean, I think so often of myself and my experience. You know, I'm going to really date myself here, Kai, because I grew up in the era of, like, you remember the Cellar in Moline?
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, Stage 3 in Davenport.
Oh,
we
yeah.
had places, if you were under, you know, the age of 21 to go dance, right?
Yeah.
There's not that
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah.
And I tell you, it really does fill my heart with such incredible admiration for these younger generations. You know, they're so much more emotionally intelligent than I ever was at their age. They're so creative. They love, they're so strong in their background and pride for their community and where they came from. So I just love seeing them get out on that dance floor. And
oh,
have
yeah.
you ever seen the videos with them doing like the different dancing formations?
See, here's
like
my
dancing in circles kind of thing.
I got to tell you about my Achilles heel when it comes
Ooh.
To dancing. And your
oh.
my spouse will back this up. I don't know if it's just some rebellion because I'm even older than you. So I remember in junior high, we would, as gym class, learn the hustle and the bus stop. And we're talking way back, right? And ever since, I have rebelled against dancing in formation with anyone.
Oh, well.
So, yeah. you know, when there's like that electric slide or something at a wedding reception, I just sort of float away.
Mine's a chicken.
Is it?
Like,
I just, but so I love to watch it and I've
yeah.
seen it
yeah.
at Mercado,
mm-hmm.
but I'm a freestyle guy. You gotta understand.
Oh, cool.
I wait, and there are some people I know when I see them heading to the dance floor, then that's going to be the dance for me. And
yeah
so, and I always see familiar faces at Mercado. It's a wonderful,
oh,
wonderful time.
Oh, man, I can't tell you the number of stories that I've heard of, like, you know, it's almost like a mini high school reunion
in
some cases, right, where you get to see people you haven't seen in decades. You know, that's definitely true for me. And the number of people, like, whatever age group.
Yes.
Older or younger, they're meeting like their partner or their boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, at mm-hmm. Mercado.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's so cool too.
Well, my favorite vibe is now that I'm a grandparent, is to see abuelos and abuelas with their grandkids and little ones and, you know, toddlers, and get back in line, you 9-year old, you know, that kind of thing, the rambunctious ones. But that's the best part of the vibe for me.
Oh, and one of my favorite nights this season was June 12th when we had Grammy Award winning songwriter, artist, and children's book author Lucky Diaz.
Mm.
He flew out from Los Angeles, came and gave a performance to the Butterworth Center, donated over 400 books for kids to get for free. And he writes in true bilingual style.
Mm-hmm.
So those, all of the two books that he has were, he signed them all. He stayed both at the public library on Thursday night when they had their concert, and then Friday night with us. And you know, signed all those books for the little ones.
Oh,
it was so cute.
Well, and we're going to come back to this fun stuff too, but what really impresses me is over that decade, The breadth and depth of programming has grown so much. I mean, yeah. You're doing things that are about encouraging other entrepreneurs. You're doing things like Loteria. I mean, first off, let's explain that. For somebody who does not know what that is, explain it. And I don't know what addictive substance is in it, because once a person does that, they are hooked for life. So please explain.
It's true. I mean, this is a game. It's a board game similar to bingo that is played in many, many Hispanic, Latin family homes, especially around the holidays. You know, it is, we do a little version of that where every round has a different little prize. And the prizes are anywhere from maybe 10 to 15 bucks, you know, just stuff that maybe you could use around the house. It's
like Hanukkah guilt, you know, just a little something fun.
Oh, for sure. Just something fun. But it is something that gathers the family together. And we've hosted little birthday parties there. Oh my gosh, it's so cute when the little ones, you know, they'll stand or, you know, choose tables right in front so that they can yell back to us what we're telling them is the next little square. So again, instead of in bingo, you have numbers, we yell out a word for a particular thing. If you're 3 years or older, you can play this game.
Of course.
You know, it's just looking up at a screen and being able to see what card we pulled and then matching it to what's on your card, or what we call your tabla.
And it's so fun.
Yeah. And we always make sure that we have like food vendors there that are already vetted from our summer season, that they have that opportunity to sell and to continue their revenue making opportunities throughout the winter, not just in the summer.
Well, and we speak about winter, but even if you have an off night weather-wise, that building is such a critical part of the programming. Tell me about that building. And inside, it's like walking into an art museum the moment you walk into the building. So tell me about the story of that building.
You know, that is such a gift. I never got the opportunity to meet Bob Ontiveros, you know, or Blenda. But the stories, I mean, and this is consistent with everyone that I've talked to that ever knew them, was that, you know, they really, Bob had the vision. You know, Blenda was always back behind the scenes kind of helping him, you know, with the growth of Grupo, with the rollout of Mercado, the whole thing. So it was his vision, right? I mean, he created that whole area of the Boys and Girls Club with Community Healthcare Center, with Mercado. Our building used to be an auto parts shop. So imagine that, like very different from what it is today. I think it took over, I know it took over a year to really, renovate that space and to get it Mercado ready. And it is a blessing. I try to remind my team all the time, you know, this is not normal in a nonprofit to own the building, to have this much land and space to be able to do this. This is a very, very big blessing for us. And Bob left the building to Mercado when he passed. So,
We're definitely going to come back and talk more about doing more homage to Mr. Ontiveros, but just seconding exactly what you said. They were, when I first met the family, they were a Rock Island family. And I mean, it was just a very welcoming home. So it's just such a great legacy that goes on.
I want to hear about that too, Kai. Like what was it like? I mean, I remember the first time I met you, you shared with me such a cool story about going skiing with them. And so I want to hear more about like that experience.
Well, so there were several Ontiveros kids and I was closest in age to their son, Greg, who was a year older than me. And the funny thing was, we got to go on People to People, which was this wonderful program that Eisenhower started. And it was getting young Americans overseas as diplomats. I mean, we weren't trained as diplomats, but part of the orientation was at the State Department in Washington. But we were going over and staying with families like a week at a time, that kind of thing. So I really got to know Greg pretty well then. Super, super guy. I mean, very much sort of a chip off the old block from Bob, who was just a go-getter and just consummate entrepreneur himself, who, of course, is founder of an extremely successful enterprise in Grupo. And but so doggone down to earth, right? And one of the things I love about growing up in places like Rock Island, Moline, is that you have incredible economic diversity. So my family was never well-to-do. I kind of knew that the Ontiveroses were fairly well-to-do, but they didn't live in an exclusive neighborhood. They lived in a neighborhood kind of by a school, and it was just sort of, you know, normal. And it was just, there was, you always sort of mythologize your friend's parents, but it was hard to do that. I mean, we didn't see, I didn't get to see Bob, job too often because he was so busy, but Blenda was so nice. And just, you know, it was like, you know, the friend's mom you'd always hope to have.
Aww.
And then, but what's been fun is to see the generations continue because their granddaughter, Maria, is, again, a chip off the old block of Blenda and Bob and that wonderful combination that they created. And yeah, well, just as long as you brought it up. So the ski story was... We're a bunch of Swedes. So for me, skiing means going long, far, flat, right?
Cross-country
skiing, right? And then Greg said, well, you should come with the ski club. We're going to go up to, I don't know if it was that place up in Dubuque or something like that. Uh-huh. And we're going to go skiing. I said, oh, so I just bring, no, you dummy. You're going to need skis. And I said, well, I what do I do with that? So he says, well, come over and we'll check it out. And, you know, I should say maybe... knowing Greg, maybe Bob didn't even know that I borrowed his ski, if you know what I mean. Uh-huh. But, you know, because we were in high school, and yeah. I grabbed the downhill skis and the boots fit and everything else. And the huge mistake that I made is if you've ever gone cross-country skiing, you work up a sweat. So yeah. You don't wear heavy clothes.
No.
You wear like a long sleeve shirt and maybe a sweater. And then, you know, that's totally anathema. And so I'm freezing
because
you're mostly going down and you just, then you're sitting on a chair and you just absolutely, but it was a great memory. It's one of the best of my life. And it was made possible because of Bob, Blenda and Greg Onaveras. So that's why I love that particular thing. But I don't want to get any further without noting that the Moline School District is naming a school for Bob Onaveras.
Yes.
And I think that is the coolest, most fitting thing. Whenever a community can, I don't think if there's a higher possible honor you can give than to name an elementary school, I mean, after somebody from that community. I mean, I went to a school named for a great poet. That's mm-hmm. quite common. Or a
right.
president or something like that.
Yeah.
But here you have someone who is just an extraordinary contributor to the fabric of the community, even years after his passing.
Yeah.
And I think it's so cool that Moline is naming an elementary school.
Oh, and it was such a surprise to the family. Ah. So it was really beautiful to see their reactions and to see them, you know, be able to receive that honor on, you know, behalf of Bob. And then I think from my perspective, you know, because we're a Latino serving organization, mm-hmm. it was really incredible to see that Illinois doesn't have very many schools that are named after Hispanics, even though we have a very large Hispanic population. So the fact that, and this is the first time in Rock Island County that there is a school named after a Hispanic person.
Well, and I try to,
pretty cool.
And I try to tell people from other communities this, that they just don't get, is that it is a wonderful thing that economic migration in the last 20, 30, 40 years has brought many people from Latin America mm-hmm. to communities like our size. And mm-hmm. I think of Columbus Junction in Iowa. You know, 50 mm-hmm. years ago, there might not have been a Spanish-speaking person there, but now it's the whole downtown. It's wonderful and it's vibrant. But the Quad Cities lays claim to having a community with deep roots in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
People coming from Guanajuato to work on the rail yards in Silvis. Mm-hmm. Another wave that started in the 1930s.
Yep.
So, and the result is when I travel for work, I'm a snob. I will not eat Mexican food in most American cities because it is not as good as you can get in the Quad Cities.
It's true.
It's absolutely
true.
Yeah, so.
We have some incredible, incredible cooks. And you know what I think too is part of it is that they just put so much love. And Guanajuato, there's a lot of similarities between that region of Mexico and our region too. Mm-hmm. Very agricultural. So then you've got that influence and... yeah, I love that we have that.
Well, listen, all we've talked about really is food so far. But we're going to continue the conversation. Friends, this is The Conversation on WVIK. Stick around. We'll be back in just a moment with Frances Williams.
Support for WVIK comes from Butterworth Center and Dear Wyman House in Moline, hosting tours, educational programs, and family events throughout the year. Information on upcoming events and the calendar page is available at butterworthcenter.com. And support for WVIK also comes from the Genesius Guild, offering public performances of classical drama all summer long in Rock Island's Lincoln Park. Shows include Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew and Aristophanes' Women's Festival. For a complete schedule, visit geniciusguild.org. And support for WVIK also comes from Impact Life, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Learn about the Blood Center's name and the need for blood products and services at bloodcenter.org.
My name is Sam Pilcher from Davenport, Iowa, and I get my news from WVIK.
Hey, welcome back to the conversation on WVIK. This week, featuring a guest with chat with guest Frances Williams from Mercado on Fifth, and I would say that I'm going to try for the next 29 minutes not to talk about food, but I know it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
It goes hand in hand with Mercado.
Oh,
right?
It does.
And that's a huge reason why people
and
come.
I was just before the break. I was talking about the wonderful deep roots of Mexican culture in the Quad Cities. But there's so many other vibrant Latin cultures here.
Yeah.
There's a place in Moline, El Sabor Catracho, which is, I think, from
Honduras. Family, yeah.
And the food is just, it's a totally different profile.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
That's one thing that I do encourage. You know, I think you have an opportunity at Mercado to meet a lot of new food vendors and to try different things, not just, you know, from Mexico. Because there is a lot of the different Latin American countries are so unique in their, you know, cuisine, in their styles, in their drinks. Even though we all share the same language, does not mean that culturally the countries are all the same.
Yeah.
So it's encouraging to see. Yeah, there's a huge Brazilian population here too,
mm-hmm.
right? John Deere has been a major influencer in attracting some incredible talent from around the globe. You know, a lot of folks from Guatemala and El Salvador mm-hmm. continues to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Look in Muscatine. There is a Puerto Rican restaurant that opened up just last year. So, you know, it's nice to see that the restaurants are reflecting the beautiful diversity that we have here in the region.
Well, a moment ago, we were talking about the beautiful building and the artwork inside and outside. Take some time to enjoy all of the murals that go all the way around the building. But that's only the visible, I think, manifestation of the depth of programming. So tell us some of the things that happen between Friday evenings and beyond summer months at Mercado on Fifth.
Well, and this is a great segue into kind of sharing a little bit more about Maria Ontiveros. She's
yes.
a woman that I really admire because, you know, it was not an easy thing to take what was this huge vision from Bob and make it a reality. I mean, he had spent, I think, a lot of time talking to a lot of people trying to put it together. It wasn't until she came back, you know, from teaching English in Asia that, you know, she was actually able to put the steps together mm-hmm. to make it a reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the programming, you know, started off very simple. You know, it was like maybe you have somebody on a guitar and it was like $100 they made. You know, you sat, I don't know, I hear stories about, you know, Blenda and Bob sitting in their little camp chairs and, you know, just hanging out, like taking in, you know, sitting there Friday night, right? It was like the way to start your weekend. It started with one food truck. And in fact, it was El Mariachi in
mm-hmm.
Moline
mm-hmm.
that they were one of the first restaurants to have a food trailer in the region, which is pretty cool. I think Virginia told me it was like 1992 or 93 when they bought that trailer.
Yeah.
So they were the first one trailer that we had at Mercado. And now to see it, like last year we had this year, excuse me, 2026, we had 63 people apply to be vendors during our summer season. We don't have enough space for that.
Yeah.
But this season we have 47 that are in, and some of them are in rotation week to week.
Yeah.
You know, it's, there's a lot going on in the Quad Cities. There are other opportunities. And I don't blame those vendors that are there that, you know, stay with us until 10 o'clock. And then, man, the next day they're up at, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning to go head over to Davenport for
exactly.
the Freight House Farmers Market. It's incredible. They're resilient.
And I do want to hear more about some of the programming that you've done. I mean, the partnerships you've done. I remember being at the facility for an event featuring the Illinois Arts Council, all these different kinds of things, and visit Quad Cities. But as long as we're talking food trucks.
I know, I keep bringing it back.
No, I'm a willing participant. Don't worry.
Oh.
But the other great thing to remember is when we say Mexican cuisine, there's nothing that should be monolithic about it because
Correct.
There's so many regions and
yes.
subcultures like there is in American. You can say, you know, okay, a Big Mac is America, whatever. But
right.
a discovery I just made in the last couple of years is Mi Oaxaca. And the
so
cuisine
good.
From Oaxaca region, yeah. state, is very, very different than the stuff that I grew up on.
Yep.
And there's similarities, of course,
yeah.
but you are cutting yourself off from an atlas of culinary possibilities. And the nice thing about Mercado is you can go all over the world in just one evening, which
For
is
sure.
great.
Yeah. And I think that's reflected in the music,
mm-hmm.
in the performances as well. You know, Mercado, yes, you had a vision, you had somebody who was able to put the vision to mm-hmm. reality, but it also took the community to really make Mercado what it is today. So partnerships, like I was so thrilled to be able to hear the stories from Jared Johnson, mm-hmm. your boss, right?
Yeah.
Like who was telling about the early days of WVIK being down at Mercado and broadcasting live and, you know, sharing with the community what was happening in Mercado to create, you know, that visibility, which we really needed to continue to grow and to attract more people. You had partnerships with like the Quad City Ballet Folklorico.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't tell you how often I've shed a tear at seeing them perform because mm-hmm. they not only have the beautiful, outfits, right, mm-hmm. that they wear in honor of the region that they're dancing for, but they also have the beautiful music to accompany it. And seeing like the parents show up, seeing their brothers and sisters, and it is a family affair, right? Everybody comes out to support one another.
Yeah.
But we've had also this increasing growth in, my first year with Mercado, we started Rinconcito de Arte. So it's the art corner.
Mm.
The first year, we ended up with like 17 Latino artists who showed off all kinds of different medium of art. Mm. So whether it was sculpture, whether it was, in fact, one guy is a tattoo artist mm. by day and, you know, drawer at night.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then recently this year, we had 3 weeks where we were supporting Lily Almanza, who's a local high school artist. You know, she took off on June 11th and went and is in, I think she's still there actually, in Italy, mm. studying with the Figge Art Museum on an art project there. But she was 9 years old when she first started like learning to paint with Bob Ross, like watching episodes of Bob Ross. Like, how beautiful is
exactly.
that? And that's, you know, the tenacity of that, you know, young person to really say, I want to do this and keep with it. I mean, she's really an incredible artist. And I remember the first year we had one of her pieces that she had created, like when she was in middle school. And I had a group of boys from the Boys and Girls Club from their summer program come over. I gave them a tour of Mercado. We toured the Rinconcito de Arte. And I said, hey, you know, can you guess which one of these paintings is by a middle schooler? None of them picked her piece.
Hmm.
And when I told them it was the piece mm-hmm. that was, they mm-hmm. were blown away. They're like, what? Somebody our age has done a piece like this? Like it, and it does. She has a sophistication in her work that was really, really fun. And then Jonathan Turner put together an article all about her story.
Yeah.
And to see, you know, her family, she, you know, her mom's a single mom. She's got three kids. To be able to get donations to support her trip. And then she even had some pieces that were for sale. You know, she's that girl. I think whatever she chooses to do, she's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So
that's exciting.
To watch her, yeah.
Well, we've talked a little bit about encouraging food and art and music. What are some of the other things that Mercado does to encourage economic development and entrepreneurship along those lines?
Yeah. In fact, you know, I really hope we have an opportunity to continue to partner with the state of Illinois to really empower our entrepreneurs here in Western Illinois. But we put on different workshops. We have subject matter experts that come in and talk about things like finance, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
building credit. And, you know, what do you do to get a loan for that, your first loan for your business, right? Or how do you find the financing to move from that food tent into a food truck? So all of those different phases of growth, we really try to find and make it accessible in Spanish language.
Mm-hmm.
We have some incredible resources here. And I have to give a shout out to the local Western Illinois University SBDC office.
Yeah.
You know, they do one-on-one technical assistance to really help people form their business plan, register that business, formalize it. I have seen firsthand the plague that is informal businesses in Latin America.
Mm.
And I you know, you could call me an eternal optimist, but I'd still believe that the United States is a great place to start a business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, but it is important to me that, you know, I do help people understand why you should formalize your business and make it and contribute to your community, because we all are part of that cycle, right, of creating vibrant downtowns, vibrant homes, vibrant communities that people can live in and be examples to those younger generations so that hopefully they too, you know, can get that entrepreneurship bug and want to create something. We have the arsenal. my gosh, mm-hmm. like to see the decades of service and public and private partnerships. We have some of the most brilliant minds in the world working on complex, you know, solutions that then turn into things that we probably use every day, like GPS,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that was developed in the 1950s or 60s. And here we are, like how many, I don't even use a map anymore. I just use my phone to
Nobody
get
knows how to use a map anymore.
Right? You know, so things have really changed. And Mercado is definitely part of, at a very micro and small level of supporting those entrepreneurs and not telling them what to do, but showing them what they can do.
Right. Right.
And how awesome is that, that, you know, we can have a community that supports us in that.
Yeah. That's one thing that I love is that this area is so well connected. And if we just pause for a minute and think about those connections and spur on the next round of connections, we're doing very, very well.
Yeah. Regardless of what goes on at a national or global level. I mean, I'm a big believer in, you know, think globally, act locally.
Yep.
But I will also say, like, these are the most important times that we need to lean in together as a community. And the Quad Cities, I think this is why I'm so proud to say that I'm from here, is that we really do care. We really do show up when we most need it.
Yeah.
And, you know, last year, Mercado faced some really serious challenges and our community showed up for us in incredible ways that I never expected. And it was everything from, you know, every single person from the board to our team to volunteers to the community, the guests that come and help support yeah. every Friday.
We're going to come back to that theme because I want to talk mm-hmm. to you more about that whole notion of the strength of community. But this is a time when we celebrate the roots and history of this community mm-hmm. because it's time once again, friends, for this week's episode of Rock Island Lines by Dr. Roald Tweet.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. Someone once remarked that there is no zeal like a convert's, an apt description of the Germans from Schleswig-Holstein who came to America following the failure of the 1848 revolution in Europe. In 1848, 250 of these 48ers arrived at Davenport. They were financially stable, cultured, well-educated, and eager to be good citizens. Above all, they were politically liberal with a burning passion for freedom. Even as they were settling in, therefore, these new immigrants became champions of the anti-slavery movement. The slaves' cause became their cause. Among their new heroes were John Brown and his sons. Many of the Germans longed to go to Kansas and fight by his side. As the dark specter of war grew during the 1850s, Illinoisans living in Rock Island continued to debate the pros and cons of slavery. The First Congregational Church next door in Moline preached thunderous abolitionist sermons, while the Davenport Germans organized military preparedness groups such as the Davenport City Artillery, the Davenport Rifles, and the Sarsfield Guards. "There is no city in the West," boasted a Davenporter, "that can equal Davenport in her display of military." That is why the Germans cheered John Brown's raid on the Federal Arsenal at Harper's Ferry, Virginia, on October 16, 1859, and bemoaned his capture. There is some evidence that they helped hide and provision some of his men. And that is why on December 2nd, the day John Brown was hanged, a small community way out west along the upper Mississippi lowered the flag to half-mast over Germans' Larman Hall. And why all the German storekeepers closed their stores and draped them in black and wore black armbands. And that is why, with Fort Sumter still echoing, the new German-American citizens became the first to answer Lincoln's call for volunteers, so many that an entire company had to wait in reserve. They had learned in Germany that citizenship involves responsibilities as well as rewards.
Rock Island Lines with Roald Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
Which means we get to hear it each and every week and the late Dr. Roald Tweet and his wonderful stories. And it's there because folks like you have made sure that WVIK is here. You can help out with that by going to wvik.org and that hard-to-dismiss donate button that you'll see flashing up in the upper right corner. Speaking of websites, my guest this week is Francis Williams from Mercado on Fifth. There's a really cool website at mercadoonfifth.org. Spell it out, no spaces, dots, or dashes, but mercadoonfifth.org. And we've been talking about some of the programs that have been growing over time. I do want to give a shout out to one of my all-time favorite bands. It's coming up in a week, July 10th. I think it's billed as Classic Mercado, but the Crooked Cactus Band. Oh yes. My gosh, these guys are fantastic.
They really are, and they were big supporters of Mercado in the beginning, too.
Yeah.
They were the first band that really showed up for Mercado, and so we gave them an honor. We awarded them this year in the 10th anniversary year because of their contributions.
And I love that. Classic Mercado.
Uh-huh.
That we've been around long enough that it can be classic. Right? That's that means a lot. It's a lot friendlier than hearing somebody describe an oldie as a song that I used to really enjoy. You know, well, no, we weren't going to go there. So we were just sort of tripping into this notion. And of course, thanks to Doc Tweet, we're thinking about there's a social activism here in this community that goes back to mm-hmm. pre-Civil War days and the immigrants, the German immigrants then became, you know, fully ameliorated Americans, as did the Swedes and the Irish and on and on and on. But we still have waves of new Americans coming.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're in a what I think is an aberration in American history where we're making things difficult for them. And of course, I'm talking about cultures that are largely celebrated by Americado. And mm-hmm. so I'd just like to get your take on how things have been, as you mentioned, last year, there were even more difficulties, but give us a health check on, I don't know, the hearts of our community.
The hearts are hurting.
Yeah.
In the Latino community, you know, our new Americans are self-quarantining is what I kind of call it, because I know families that are literally so scared to go out that they just go to work and come back home and that's it. They don't even go to the grocery store. They either have other people go for them or they order, you know, the groceries to be delivered. So I think all of us that went through COVID and that time of quarantine, I hope have a level of empathy for folks that are living in that kind of paralyzing fear. You know, that they just don't want to go out and don't want to take that risk. You know, they risked enough coming here and then to think that they would have to possibly go back or in some cases be shipped to another continent. I mean, those are some of the realities, you know, unfortunately, that are occurring. And it's hard to see our families locally struggle, mm-hmm. you know, and to see some of the young people who were born here, mm-hmm. but their parents are immigrants facing the possibility of their parents being deported. And then, you know, can you imagine at 15, Kai, like, you know, having to think, my gosh, what do I do if my parents get deported and then I have to raise my younger siblings?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a reality I don't want to see many people, you know, have to go through, but it is a risk. It is a risk. I mean, that's unfortunate, but, hopefully our mental health community is prepared to be able to support. I do think that we need to be mental health in general, I think needs to, you know, continue to be raised up.
But there's this aspect of it's willful and intentional fear induction that even people who are completely legal U.S. citizens, if they happen to have the wrong skin color, they get swept up in this. And democracy needs to be built on trust. And when that works, it is a tremendous bulwark against fear. But when the strategy is fear, I mean, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine. And to your point, yeah, it is great to have empathy remembering our quarantine days.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's many people that are listening to this conversation right now who don't have immigrants who had to hustle and jive to get just to where they could be here in this country. And now if you're two or three or four generations removed from that, if your heart is removed from that experience and you don't have empathy, then I think you need, I don't know, you need something I can't prescribe. I don't know what it is, but what really strikes me is that stands in such a juxtaposition to the vibe of hanging out in downtown Moline on a Friday night and seeing what community feels like, right?
And it's true. Mercado is a place where everyone is welcome and community does come together for many different reasons. You know, there's so much beauty within the Hispanic culture to celebrate, mm-hmm. right? But I also think that that resonates for a lot of folks that maybe aren't Hispanic mm-hmm. and that they still value and still connect with. So that's really beautiful to see. But to see that we are facing some of these realities right now. I read something recently about, you know, the fact that we're kind of in a weird position. We have generations of people here in the United States that have never didn't go through World War I or II, mm-hmm. right? So they didn't see that level of the fight against a dictator and authoritarianism. And then we've got a new generation coming up that may not really understand democracy and what it
right.
and what the process of moving into a dictatorship is like. You know, I give the example a lot of Venezuela, like mm-hmm. look at what happened mm-hmm. to them. And mm-hmm. they were one of the most powerful countries in South America for a very long time. And, you know, I was in Colombia when I was watching women and children begging to come through the border into Colombia because they were starving. And yeah. and the price of just a pound of sugar was like $150
yeah.
US.
Yeah.
You know, that's insane. And you're controlling people through money. Now, that's a different level of genocide that I think needs to have its own, you know, separate topic. I'm not trying to go there,
right.
but I am saying that, you know, we need to be more aware of the signs of what this type of transition looks like
yeah.
and how we can help fight it together. But that's why I say, I think leaning into our community is so important.
Well, and you mentioned Venezuela, and of course, that's on the hearts and minds of many of us this week
yes.
with the terrible earthquakes.
Horrible.
And
too.
Yeah. And it's, we're still gauging the tremendous destruction. But you bring up a good point. We sometimes talk about, you know, capitalism v. socialism. That has nothing to do with, or we talk about democracy v. fascism, but there are other opposites of democracy. And one is oligarchy, where mm-hmm. you willfully invest the power in a very few hands. Mm-hmm. And that's, no matter what it plays out as, fascism or anything else, that's what really, I think, contributed to the destruction of the Venezuelan civic culture. Mm-hmm. It has threatened others in our hemisphere, continues to do so. So if people get bogged down in this fascism v. democracy kind of a conversation, just remember there's other ways you can slide away from democracy. So how about, let's just default and defend democracy. How about mm-hmm. we do that?
Exactly.
You know, let people vote.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
As long as there's not a clear and compelling reason not to let them vote.
Correct.
Right? And let's be mindful of, you know, the things that got us through not just World War I and World War II, but the Great Depression mm-hmm. and rebuilding this country by being mindful of the common wealth rather than personal wealth. And
yeah.
again, I see this. I see it when I go to Mercado on Fifth. It's community. It's neighbors helping neighbors. It's people who don't know each other smiling on a dance floor, right, at each other and just enjoying the beauty of an evening. We need more of that.
We do. That yeah. social interaction, I think, for all of us as human beings is so important. You know, I think we can't underestimate that enough. And the fact that we have a space like Mercado to be able to come together as community in a place that is celebrating joy and mm-hmm. celebrating family and celebrating music and life and art. I mean, those are things that really so contribute not just to the beautiful experience at Mercado, but to our entire, you know, downtown Moline, Quad Cities area, right? It's those are worth fighting for too.
Well, and I do want to put in some plugs here. Keep looking forward, and I'm very grateful that we give a. So I always can remember that cactus is nopales, right?
And, yes.
But I can't remember how to say crooked. So the Crooked Cactus Band.
Chuecos, I think.
Chuecos, yeah. That's right. Nopales uh-huh. chuecos.
Yep.
Okay, very good. And then that's July 10th.
Yes.
And then, oh, I just need to know what Sabor del Mercado was.
It's
going
the
to
taste
be.
Of Mercado.
Of course.
Mm. So this is a food competition and a food tasting. Yeah, I mean, we're back to food again, Kyle.
Amen.
I don't think that there's much of Mercado that doesn't tie us together as food, right?
That's
in many
right.
cultures. But yes, the competition is really great. Modern Woodman supports us in that. And we actually have voting cards mm-hmm. that we will hand out the day of. So you'll pay a $5 entry fee if you're between the ages of 13 and 64. Okay.
Right.
That's every Friday.
Yeah.
But if you want to do the tasting menu, it's an additional $5, which for that
for the
amount of food that's a pretty good deal, I think, actually.
I love
and you
it.
Get to try. And we have some incredible vendors this year. In particular, I want to shout out Luna Kitchen.
Mm.
So this is a husband and wife team. Husband's Mexican, mm-hmm. wife is Filipino,
mm-hmm.
or Filipina, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And they have created a menu that fuses the best of those two cuisines, and it is out of this world.
It's so good. I want to try the Puerto Rican place because they use a similar palate with Filipino. My children are part Filipino, so
absolutely. Awesome.
So I got to make sure they're there for that. Noche de Colores. Tell me about what that's going to
be. So that is just that's another celebration kind of all of the beauty and colors of Latin America, right? And all the different facets. But we have the other kind of big night that we have is in August, I think it's 15th. There's a car show.
Mm-hmm.
So the Latin Persuasion Car Club comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have the Mexican Independence Day in September, which mm-hmm. is Friday, September 11th. And really that's, you know, going back to the history of the Quad Cities and the Hispanics, we really kick off an entire weekend of incredible celebrations.
Oh, yeah.
So Friday night Mercado, we do El Grito
mm-hmm.
on that Friday night.
That's
and then
the 11th.
That's the 11th. On the 12th will be the Hero Street celebration in Silvis.
Wonderful.
And then Sunday is the Mexican Independence Day parade in East Moline. So it's fun to... you know, kind of partner and
of course.
Compliment one another in that.
Now, I need some language help.
Yeah.
Tamborazo.
Tamborazgo La Magdalena.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that's going to be October 16th. Tell me what that takeover is.
They are such a fun, lively band. You know, they have such an incredible following. They do a lot on social media as well to really amp up, you know, kind of... their followers
mm-hmm.
and get them going to wherever location that they're going to be. They are a traditional kind of Mexican banda is
mm-hmm.
what they called. So
mm-hmm.
they use a lot of really good rhythms. A lot of the circular kind of dance formations that you might see in some of the Mercado videos off of our Facebook page, they are a band that plays right into that, right?
Mm.
They've got a tuba. They've got all these different instruments. It's like, you know, six or seven guys, so it's a lot. They're a big band, and they always have such beautiful energy that they bring to their performances.
Well, okay, we've been talking a lot about wonderful, great cuisine, a lot,
mm-hmm.
The two of us, but having this brother visiting, I got to put in some plugs. We discovered Sunny Dog's hot dog stand.
Yeah.
If you can find them, oh my Lord, they're so good. And then we went to Al's Burgers.
Oh,
I took him there.
So
and then Woke Smoothies up on Hilltop
yes.
in Davenport. I had my first Michelle. You can guess who that's named for. And it was amazing, out of this world. But I do want to try to class it up just a little bit beyond food, even though the food's very classy. Are you reading anything that's fun that you'd care to tell us about or seeing any movies or anything like that?
Oh man.
You're so busy in the summer. I imagine if you know.
Yeah, my time is a little more limited, you know, this time of year, but I always try to, you know, I'm one of those people that, you know, I've got the 10 books that I'm just rotating
Me
through
too.
Depending on
Me
what's
too.
On my
Anything head. Jumping to the top, though, that you're really grooving on?
Well, it's more from an operational standpoint, which is a book called Traction. So it really is helping to create the systems and processes that, you know, hold your teams accountable. Another one that I really love is E-Myth by Michael Gerber, which is a great one, too, if you're an entrepreneur.
I love it.
And you want to scale. You know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs. One of the biggest mistakes that they make is, and I've done it, too, so I get it, is working in the business and not on the business. And making that separation, the E-Myth really helps you to think through this.
Well, thank you for great recommendations for the mind, the body, everything in between.
It's true.
And with that, I can't believe it, but we're out of time. And
wow.
I want to thank my guest, Frances Williams from Mercado on Fifth. Thank you so much. And friends, please remember, you can always catch the conversation twice each week on WVIK, Saturday morning live at 10 o'clock, right before Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, but then a rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8, right after Fresh Air. You can always find recent episodes also at wvik.org. Just look for us under the podcast tab. From the campus of Augustana College, this is Kai Swanson inviting you to join us next week for the conversation on WVIK. Our guest will be Colonel Joe Parker from the Rock Island Arsenal. Until then, friends, have a great week.
You've been listening to The Conversation on WVIK. If you missed part of it or just want to hear it again, tune in at 8 o'clock on Monday evening, right here on WVIK. Thank you to these listeners whose recent gifts help sustain local news, music, and public radio service on WVIK. Josh Baker and John and Sonia Hurdy. We're grateful for your support of WVIK.
I'm Joe Immel from Charlotte, Iowa, and WVIK is my NPR station.
You can depend on us for news in the Quad Cities at WVIK, 90.3 FM and HD Rock Island, and 95.9 FM K240DZ Dubuque. WVIK is your NPR station.